Boom. GloucesterCast 196. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9. I think we had 9 a couple weeks ago. Yeah, close. Intro music fades out. Big K, 3 different groups, plus our regulars. We have, go ahead, we're going to go right around.
Ken Real, Cape Ann Chamber.
Carrie McKenna, Cape Ann Chamber.
Deborah Kramer, I live in West Gloucester.
Yeah, but you're also the lady that does the horseshoe crabs.
I wrote a book called The Narrow Edge.
And the book, yeah.
Barbara Walsh, I'm an actress performing at Gloucester Stage.
Tony, nominated actress.
That's correct.
That's right, yeah.
Heidi Dallin, Gloucester Stage.
Catherine Ryan, Good Morning Gloucester.
Robert Walsh, Gloucester Stage Company.
Ken Smith, Good Morning Gloucester.
Thank you very much. And I'm Joey Schumatari, your host. Ken and Carrie, you're here. This is it. Like, you can almost see what's going to happen in a couple of weeks. That things will slow down a little bit. But you guys have had a whirlwind especially the past month, and you're not done.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Joey. We're so happy to be here. It's been an amazing summer. The weather, aside from the drought conditions that we have, could not possibly be better for business on Cape Ann. The events have been spectacular. The attractions are doing very well. The accommodations and the restaurants are all doing really well as a business segment. And so we just wanted to quickly kind of touch on some recent events that have happened this past summer and a couple that are coming up this weekend. But starting out, we did the first block party in the middle of July, and we're getting ready for the second block party here this coming Saturday.
How many are they going to be all together?
There's 3 total.
Yep.
And the third one will be on Friday of Schoonerfest weekend.
Oh, wow.
The first one went really well. We had a surprise there with a high-flying circus act, and Carrie's going to talk a little bit about the one coming up. We went right from there into Festival by the Sea, which is the big event in Manchester. We had over 80 vendors there, several food suppliers, and some great music, and that day could not have gone better for us. And then a week later, we did the Blues Festival.
And we had people there, and they said it was like
amazing.
Like, if you weren't there, really missed something.
The talent in the show was fantastic. Yeah. And the venue, you can't ask for a nicer place to watch a show. And, you know, Ringo did the Country Fest for the first time this year. There's so much opportunity to do more on the music scene in that particular venue. So we're looking forward to doing that. And then that same weekend was Sidewalk Bazaar. And that's not our event. You know, kudos to Joe and to John Orlando for pulling off that great event. The merchants did really well. We were part of it on the street.
Tell me, Joe Shalino, right?
Yep, Joe Shalino. Yep. Yeah, it did a great job with it, as they have done. And then this weekend. So let's talk a little bit about this weekend. We have the Waterfront Festival, which is the largest attraction in Stage Ford Park. We'll have upwards of 10,000 people here between visitors and locals over a two-day period, Saturday and Sunday. Signage is going up shortly. We've been on Facebook promoting the event. We'll be there both days in supporting that event. And then we have our second block party that Saturday afternoon. So we'll be dividing and conquering here in Gloucester in particular. It's going to be a fantastic weekend, and the weather looks really good.
Yeah.
Carrie, if you want to say a couple of words on the block party.
Well, the Waterfront Festival, first of all, we've got about 200 vendors coming in. They're all artists and crafters and food, and it's a juried art show, so it's really high-quality stuff, and it's a lot of fun. And as Ken said, we expect to get somewhere around 10,000 people coming through over the course of 2 days. It's great for Gloucester. Hopefully those people will stay, and on Saturday go to the block party that evening, which starts at 6 o'clock, 6 to 10. The Waterfront Festival goes 9 to 6, and then 6 to 10 is the block party. We've got live music, Larry Karsman, Wildflowers, Down Home Swings, A-Train Orchestra with Willie Alexander, Rick and Sophia, Renee and Joe, and then Carlo and his buddies will be walking the street again as they did last year.
You have that many acts going on for the block party?
Yeah, we have 3 stages that each have 2 segments, and then we try to get some buskers and some strolling musicians, and it's quite a production, I must say. We've got Gloucester Stage kids coming. They came for the first one, and they had a tremendous crowd, one of the biggest crowds of the evening. We've got Cape Ann Dance will be there. Dr. Bones will be doing a magic show. Folklore Theater will be coming out. We've got somebody coming down with chair massages and henna tattoos, face painting.
Wow.
We've got somebody doing past life readings. And then, of course, we have several of the restaurants will be out on the street serving, and we also have the food court, if you want to call it that, up towards the Gloucester end. We've got Jim's Red Umbrella. He's doing Texas-style grilled cheese and brisket chili. Nini's Catering, who's got quite an assortment. She's incredible. She's really making a hit here in Cape Ann. Nina's Fried Dough, Markup Bread, The Cannoli Lady will be back, and Salty Franks is coming out on the street for this one, which we're very excited about.
My Lord.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
My Lord.
That's all one night.
The food is amazing. The food is great, right? Yeah. I mean, you could come for any one of these things. Yeah. You could come for the food because the food's going to be great. You could come for the people watching because that's going to be great. You could come for the music because that's going to be great. But like really, there's something for
everybody.
It's such out of all the things that we have, I think it's the most family friendly thing that goes on in Gloucester throughout the course of the whole year.
You're right. Because there's definitely something for everyone. Then down in the West End, we've got Virgilio's and Kathy Cecilia will be out with their rice balls and pizza, and it's great fun.
It's a great take. Yeah. Crazy not to come and partake in that.
Yeah, and
people can get information on the Chamber's website, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's on Facebook. Yep. And
the Chamber's website is?
CapeBandChamber.com.
Can't forget that.
Yeah. And also, reminder that we're partnered with the city on the block parties this year. And do you know what today is, by the way?
Sapatia's birthday.
It happened to be our mayor's birthday. Happy birthday, Mayor.
Great mayor. Yeah, we love that.
Facebook.
Nice work. Nice work. I love it.
Our job here is done.
Can we have an update on the license plates?
Yeah, great question. So, registry is moving along. They're now cashing the checks. We're still on target to get the plates by the end of this year. We do not have an update from them. Most recently, as I'm sure most everyone knows, the closest RMV office to us here on Cape Ann, which is in Danvers, closed. So the next closest offices are in Wilmington and Revere. So we have tried or contacted all 900 applicants and given them the choice of Wilmington or Revere, and have submitted an updated spreadsheet to the registry. So they now have that information. What another new development is that through the insurance companies, you can get a runner to exchange your plates. So you actually do not have to make that drive. And we've been talking about a runner that really works here on Cape Ann. And he is very happy to just go down to especially Wilmington and change out a whole bunch of plates at a given point in time.
Yeah. So that's money well spent.
$20?
All day.
Any one of us.
All day.
Okay, $20.
All day long.
To get our insurance company to use a runner to change out the plates for us. You have to go through your insurer anyway because you need updated paperwork for your new license.
When they started doing that, when you could like use a runner to so you didn't have to go through that was like the greatest thing ever.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, it's such a no-brainer. Yeah. Right. All in. I can't wait. We got one. We have a custom one.
Actually, you were one of our first subscribers, Joey. You've been so supportive, and we got the custom.
It's like four of the same numbers in a row.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's gonna be very distinctive. It was a present. It was a present for Kate.
Nice.
How can you beat that? Awesome. Can people still get them if they want to do it?
Well, so what's happening is until the plates are actually available now to go on the road, they're basically in a hold mode. Mm-hmm. So you actually cannot sign up. What we're doing is if you contact the chamber, we're keeping a list of interested applicants, and we will contact those applicants when the plates are available, which again should be end of this year, early next year. And then anybody can sign up at any time, and it will all be done through the registry. The chamber is getting out of the application business, which we are.
But that's fantastic. So it's always but the people that got in early, they're getting rewarded because exclusive.
So either they're going to be a custom number as asked for, or they're going to be a 3-digit number, which will be so cool because that's a way to show that they were one of the initial subscribers to the.
Oh, 3-digit number?
Yeah.
Wow, that's super cool.
Yeah, very neat. And then remember also, we will be auctioning off the very low number plates starting some point next year. So number one, number two, number three.
Those will be bananas. Oh my God. I'm like, I love it.
All the money again goes back to the Cape Ann community through a new foundation that we set up, a true 501c3 nonprofit called the Cape Ann Community Foundation, toward the priorities of promotion of the region, economic development, and education. So the money comes in and the money goes back out to support the community. So not only do you get a beautiful design and show your love of Cape Ann, but you're supporting Cape Ann.
You guys are doing awesome work. I know personally, because I was on the board of directors at the chamber, and you guys do not get enough credit for all the work you guys do behind the scenes.
You know, it's our pleasure, Joey.
I'm a huge fan of the chamber. I always have been a huge fan of the chamber, and and you know, people need to get the people that aren't that are on board. Great for you, but the people that haven't got on board, they need to recognize all. I mean, I know the staff that you guys have and the work that comes through that office is just incredible. So, kudos. Thank you, guys.
What better way to spend a Sunday morning than here on Good Morning Gloucester?
Oh,
what we're doing, right? Right? We love it.
Well, I know Carrie's got her shorts on. She's ready for the beach. You don't have to stick around. If you want to stick around, you can stick around.
We're going to go. Yeah.
I appreciate you
Thanks
guys coming
much,
in.
Do
well. Take care.
Thank you.
All right. There was Ken Real and Carrie McKenna from the Chamber. Next up, we got people from Gloucester Stage. Regular. They're almost part of the cast now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's good.
It's like every other weekend you guys are in here pimping something.
We have a lot going on, right?
Come on.
That's right. No, it's good. We love it. I mean, I can't get enough. We can't get enough of the art scene in Gloucester and what you guys do. Heidi, why don't you start out? What's coming up?
Well, right now we are in the midst of Songs for a New World. Which is,
I heard there's a really great producer on this one, director.
Director, yeah, the director, yeah, he's learning. Yeah. He's okay. He's doing well. We like him here in Gloucester.
Is that right?
So, you know, yeah. That happens to be Mr. Bob Walsh, who's also the artistic director of the theater. So, you know, this is a special show if this is the one that he wants to direct.
Is everybody behind the scenes especially on their toes because they know it's his?
Yes.
Don't mess up, or Mr. Robert Walsh will have you shit canned.
It's an iron grip.
Well, and then he brought his cousin, so like we can't escape it. Like we're always on our toes. It's like,
yeah, if he's not there, then you get the narc in the corner, right? Yeah. Barbara, Tony nominated actress from New York. You're here to you're one of the featured actors in this performance.
Yeah, and I'm going whale watching the Cape Ann Whale Watch Friday with a group from the show. But anyway, that's nice. Yeah. I mean, how can I not? We are in this production, beautifully staged, directed by my wonderful cousin. And a lovely group of actors, singers who are very individual and very talented, and we've just had a ball. I mean, from day one, we've enjoyed each other and the material, and we're just, it's a wonderful little summer gig.
I know that Gloucester Stage has this never dark thing. Like, there's something going on all the time.
Yeah.
And it's always interesting to me to find out how much time did you guys have to like go through all your...
Well, we, for our show, Songs for a New World, we had 2 weeks of rehearsal, basically, which is, much to my chagrin, very short.
Right.
Hopefully short.
Yes.
What's typical? What is typical?
4 weeks at least, you know, or more.
Normal.
Yeah, and then in New York, shows
well,
that
depends.
You've done in longer, 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on if it's a brand new musical, if it's a brand new play, then you're developing it, and you're more apt to have a 4 week period of rehearsal, but 3 weeks is standard for other regional theaters and even off Broadway and whatnot. But
2 weeks is really.
2 weeks is ridiculous. Yeah, you gotta fix that.
Well, we need to raise money. Donor needs to donate a ton of money so that they can have a separate facility so that they can just constantly be rehearsing. You know what I mean? So like
that
you have
every
month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? We need like some benefactor. Right?
Forever
it's just gonna toss a couple million your way.
Wonderful benefactors already who are. Barbara's staying with Maggie and Joe Rosa. Again, the last actress I brought was staying with
Maggie and Joe Rosa.
In the world.
Yeah.
So,
love the Roses.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
they're
you know, amazing. We have a lot of real loyal supporters, but we need, you know.
Well, at least a building nearby that you nurse in.
Well, so you can appreciate how many people are involved. You know, so you've got a staff, you've got people who are building the sets or, you know, designing all the stuff.
If you had another space, you could build this. You could start building the sets offset, right? And
yeah, primarily right now, it would be great to have an additional, you know, have a rehearsal space.
Yeah.
So we rely on folks. Endicott College was wonderful to let us have this rehearsal opportunity there, and we'll be there for the next year.
Do you kind of have a partnership? Do you like bring in do you bring in interns from Endicott College too? Do you have any kind of reciprocal thing going
that
on
would
with
be
them?
The, yeah, that's the notion.
Oh, that's nice.
We'll have some opportunities for students over the course of the year.
Ah, well, there you go.
But when you say at Endicott, you mean at their space over by the chamber?
Not near the chamber, the actual campus.
The campus, the for their stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me about the play.
Well, I wouldn't call it a play so much as it's a song cycle. It's a series of songs. They each are self-contained in that they have their stories, separate stories from each other, and they have a beginning and a middle and an end. And sometimes they are articulated through one person or two people, or the ensemble contributes to many of them with like one solo person. So there's a variety of ways that the piece is expressed and brought to life. I think that the challenge, I did this show before 10 years ago, my husband's a director, and we did it at a theater in New Jersey. And I mean, it's complicated. Jason Robert Brown is an incredibly talented gifted songwriter and lyricist and composer. And I think what ties these pieces together is that they're all universal. The stories that are woven together, I think, are human stories. And I think Bob has done a tremendous job with creating a seamless transition from one to the next, where you wouldn't necessarily have that on the written page for us to deal with. He's tied it in via staging, lighting, creating even a small connection between two actors that connects the two. So instead of just song, clap, what's next? You know, you're following this sort of seamless thing, which is a beautiful thing, element, I think.
How did the piece come to you, Bob?
I actually produced it at Brandeis University, where I'm on the faculty, a year ago. And coincidentally, you know, we were thinking about a musical, and also what musical fits into our space. Because obviously we don't want to compete with North Shore Music Theater. So, a number of years ago, I think they did the third production of Jacques Brel Is Alive and Well and Living in Paris, right? So just every time they produced it, been a huge hit. So this piece is quite like Jacques Brel. It's got that same sensibility. The song stylistically, it's different because Jason Robert Brown is way more Broadway oriented. Brel is got his own French thing.
So the play is running now through
August
27th, right?
Yep. And it's great. It's a family show. Bob was so gracious and kind. And the preview weekend, he treated all the parents and the students of the summer session youth acting workshop to come and see the show.
Oh, nice.
Which
that's big time.
Was
especially in the middle of the summer. When you could be filling that seat with paying customers.
Right, exactly.
Well, yeah, and it's fun for them to get to see what we do, you know, on a professional level, and it's fun for us to just have them in the buildings.
And the kids loved it. I mean, kids came from, they were 6-year-olds came to 16-year-olds, and they all loved it. And the majority of them have come back again to usher, because if you usher at Gloucester Stage, you get to see the show for free. Mm. So a lot of the students do that, and you also get your choice of a concession item at the concessions, which the kids love that.
She's what is it called? Charles Manson. Like, you know what I mean? She's got this cult going on over there. She's bringing up these kids.
Like, right.
Is it the Children of the Corn? What are we talking
about?
It's a joke. You know a joke.
No,
Hold on. But it's great, though. We joke, but it's the... These kids, they keep coming back and back. So obviously you're doing something right, because I see a lot of the familiar faces and they just love it. They flourish. This is a recurring theme. I always talk about this. My daughters, like, they did that. They had a little scene.
Lettuce and
Lovage,
yes.
Lettuce and Lovage as extras.
How great.
And then she was in the school play, middle school play. And honestly, it was almost like a turning point for her. Like the confidence that my eldest daughter got from this, doing this performance, that it's great for
theater
kids.
Theater has magic.
Yeah, right? Theater has magic. That should be the byline in the podcast. Theater has magic.
Well, in a piece like this, too, what's fun for me, one thing I knew about it was you needed to really focus on how do the performers all relate to one another. And as Barbara was saying, you know, these guys have had a lot of fun. I had so much fun working with them. But as that happens, if they're having fun, we have fun. Mm. And their personalities come out. So that's the thing that invites you into this piece. So each individual song is its own little one-act play, and it's fun to go on that journey. But it's also fun to see the performer's real personality coming out through that piece, so that's what, you know, we instantly gravitate to that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That we feel like we know this person through the song while they're also taking us into this imaginary world. So
yeah, and it's fun. I mean, Barbara plays Mrs. Santa Claus.
Oh, yeah.
Don't ask.
You don't look very rotund to be... stuff you with pillows?
No, the idea is that she's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's okay. A pastiche.
It starts off in sort of the Edith Piaf or La Dolenia world that Jason has written stylistically. I've placed myself with the approval of my director on top of the piano with a very short boa and a cigarette in a holder. Then I drop all of that and I'm full of rage as, you know, just another housewife.
Oh, that's great.
It's kind of fantastic.
Yeah.
Super vocally challenging, but an enormous amount of fun.
There you go. All right. People got a good...
She also does one of the premier songs in the piece is called Stars and the Moon. And people seem to identify with that, having heard a lot of covers of it.
But, yeah, I love that.
It's a beautiful song.
Barbara gets to do that.
I love it. It was sort of it's like the what do you call it, the point of negotiation. I get that song.
Oh, really? Nice. Well, that's what you get, the kind of juice when you're a Tony nominated actress.
And the cousin.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the Tony nomination was in 1992. I guess it's kind of like being an alcoholic. Once you are, you are.
There you go.
You know, so it's, yeah, because one time I was doing a concert and someone said that I used to be a Tony nominee. And that's why I brought up that correlation. Like, yeah, Scott, I think I still am. Anyway, but that aside, that
she
was for a whole other show.
She should have won. She was. I saw the show. I didn't know she'd be in my hometown years later. But it was such a... She was unbelievable.
That's so kind.
And just really terrific. I was so excited when she was on the list.
She came to my opening night.
Yeah, I think I got tickets at TKTS and stood in line. I didn't go to opening night. But it was the hottest show in New York at the time. And she... the hottest actress. She was really phenomenal.
Can you say the did you say the name of the show already? What was the name?
Oh, Falsettos.
Falsettos.
Okay.
Yes.
There you go.
They're reviving it. James Lapine, who directed it and co-wrote it, is reviving it next year on Broadway with a whole other team. They'll never come close to what we
never.
Wow. Wow.
Never.
Shot across the bow right there.
Just saying.
Never.
Shot across the bow.
But this whole cast has Broadway, the majority of the cast, have all been on Broadway. Wendy Waring, who's also in the show, is Bea Waring's daughter.
Right, okay.
Oh, she must be Lisa's sister.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the way it works. Yeah.
I didn't know there was.
Wendy is a working New York actress. She was in Will Rogers Follies. She was in The Producer. She was Ula. She was in Crazy for You, and is just, you know, absolutely. We had the same singing teacher in New York City.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes.
That's
and we kind of knew of each other that we both had Cape Ann connections. And I mean, it's just, you know, you don't have to go to New York and stand in line for TKTS to see great performances. You can just go
see
to Gloucester.
Speaking of great performances, this is it. This week, you have the free stage reading of Kyle with Kyle Bradstreet. Why don't
Kyle
you explain
Bradstreet,
what that's?
Yeah, about? It's a friend of Bob's.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
As well.
Kyle's one of the supervising producers and writers on Mr. Robot.
Oh. On USA Network,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
One of my favorites.
He won a Writers Guild Award.
Yeah.
And Copper on BBC as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but he's got to be, so, but it's free.
It's
as
free.
Again, part of your Never Dark series.
Yes.
What day is this?
That's Tuesday night, 7:30.
Tuesday 16. At 7:30, you can go, you can show up. Do you have to get those reserved seats, or is it first come, first served?
Just come.
Yeah. Just come. And
the talent, I mean.
Explain for people that might not know what a stage reading is.
So the idea is that there's been only a very modest amount of rehearsal. So the actors familiarize themselves, we hit a couple of main points. And that's, it's purely just let the words be in the air.
But read, not memorized.
Yeah, correct.
And kind of cool, though. Kind of probably cool.
You're in on something new. I mean, you can watch Mr. Robot every week and see, I see Kyle's name. It's very exciting. But now you can see, you know, I think he started as a playwright, and that's where his, you know, throughout, and this is his newest play. I mean,
that's so great.
And to be able to see it for nothing.
Yeah.
And then is there a time, like in the future, when you might do the play at the Gloucester stage?
Correct. That's the idea. And we're looking at these
two
scripts in a way. We, after the read through, we then have a conversation with the audience. So we have a discussion. You know, what are some of the takeaways? How do people, you know,
let you in on a secret. If you want to like be a part of the scheduling of Gloucester Stage and what happens, and have a voice, come to these staged readings, and you know, let your opinion be known. You really love something. You can, you know, maybe you could influence the great Bob Walsh. Who knows?
The great Bob Walsh.
New permanent title.
Ego. He's like shoehorned to get his head through the door on the way out.
I won't be able to.
Hey, I want to say one thing. Next Saturday, August 20th, Playtime Stories for our youngest audience members, for 2 years old and up. It's very exciting, Playtime Stories.
When?
Saturday, August 20th.
10 a.m.
Okay,
10 a.m.
next weekend. Okay.
2 years old and up, we read and perform stories in the lobby of the theater, the Youth Acting Workshop students. Then we do crafts with all the kids. It's great. The parents can just sit and we take care of their children. But next week, the Youth Acting Workshop students are going to be joined by Dossie Peabody, who is a Boston treasure. She started her career at Gloucester Stage. She starred in all of Israel's seminal shows. She starred in and created the role in Park Your Car in Harvard Yard, The Widow's Blind Date, and she lives on the North Shore. She's from the North Shore, and she's on the board of the theater now, and she teaches acting. She doesn't do a lot of acting anymore, really.
Film mostly.
She does mostly film. She's in every single film that comes to town.
So those kids are going to be busy, because you got Saturday, you're going to do that for, what, 10 a.m.?
10 a.m.
10 a.m. And then at night, they're going to be doing performances at the block party, right?
Yeah, that's right. And then Thursday, we're at the farmer's market on the 25th performing.
Oh my God, keeping these kids busy.
Yeah. That's right. Boom.
Keeping them off the streets.
That's right.
out of trouble.
Are you there every Thursday, or is this just a...
They have different groups come and run a children's event. Okay. So we do an event, but we also perform, and the kids...
Do you have to sign up for that Saturday morning thing with the kids, or they just show up?
No, just show up.
And what age is it good for?
Probably 2 to maybe 10.
Yeah.
10 or 11, you know, really. You know, next week with Dossie there, I think adults will like it. And Dossie's grandmother is a children's book author. She wrote Pat the Bunny, which I guess...
What?
I know, it's a very famous...
It's a very famous book. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, good. So you... Oh, good.
My God. It's every child.
Oh, my God. So...
I love Pat the Bunny.
Yeah. Pat the Bunny. It's great.
It's one of my favorites.
Pat the Bunny. So it was the first touchy-feely book. And her grandmother wrote that.
Right, it was very original when it came.
So we're reading her grandmother's book, and we're also doing Make Way for Ducklings as well. We wanted to do like a local theme. Yeah.
Yeah, with the seagulls in the background.
With the seagulls, yeah. So, and Dossie will get to work with the kids will all work with an award-winning actress. And
you know, can we just say something about this time? I don't want to take this away from this wonderful actress, but 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings, if you have young children, is like, if you haven't got the kids out of the house, if you have more than one child, and you haven't got them out of the house by 10 a.m., that's the point where they start stabbing each other in the face with knives, right?
Bring them to us.
So you have to bring them to here. You got to get them out of the house. If you don't have a plan, right, you're like, this is perfect. Like, you, ahead of time, you already know, by 10, that 9, we're out. We're going to get breakfast, and we're going to go to this Gloucester stage.
After the performance,
you got to keep them busy. You can't just leave these kids to their own devices.
Like
they will
tear them out.
Where
and they're well behaved.
We play theater games with the kids before we start, so we get all the kids in the audience up and play theater games with them. And then after the performance, we have craft tables set up, and the kids make crafts that relate to the show. So everyone leaves with a mask, the very Hungry Caterpillar. We made caterpillar necklaces and.
Is this the intern doing all this?
Sarah, my fabulous apprentice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Give that job to the intern. Absolutely.
She's much... No, you know what?
That Indycar College. Great partnership for that Indycar College.
No. This is... Sarah is from Tufts, actually. She's an apprentice. Sarah Vanderwall, and she's from Danvers. And she, you know, is the guiding force of Playtime. And she loves crafting.
If she's doing this, right, make sure you get a nice spot for her at the end of the rainbow. Please. It'd be a nice title, too. You know. I'm sure. No, but these kids, you have one. The other intern was the stage director for the Lettuce and Lovage, right? She came up through, wasn't she an intern at one time? Or was she the lighting person? Or was she the soundboard person?
Who are we talking? Jenna Ward, the stage manager. The Lash Schwartz? Yeah. No.
We went to Lettuce and Love
It. I think it was a young woman, and she had a big part of the... I think she was the stage manager. She was herding the people where they were supposed to go and stuff like that.
Jenna's one of our former apprentices, and she's now an equity stage manager, so I think
But she was an apprentice at one time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But what I'm saying, the point that I'm trying to make is, like, if you get involved with this, like, there are...
You can move up.
You can move up. Right, yeah.
There's opportunity.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's
absolutely.
How you have to get started somewhere.
Our marketing director is also a former apprentice.
There you go.
And I've had students in the youth program who have gone on to work in the box office and do other things at the theater as well. So.
There you go. So you can get tickets online, GloucesterStage.com?
Yep. GloucesterStage.com.
Simple.
You can even reserve for Playtime Stories now. It's very exciting.
Ah, there you go. All right, I'm going to put this right in here.
We got a great review on the Globe today. So.
Oh, yeah, really? Who wrote it?
Congratulations. Donna Coyne, the
first string theater critic.
Number one.
All right.
He's the number one. He's the man.
Just
the number
like
one.
That. Just like that.
Congratulations.
When
you get a review in the Globe like that, do you get people coming to Gloucester for the evening, like, you know, dinner in a theater?
Absolutely.
Like that? That's tremendous.
He came on that Wednesday, didn't he? There
you go.
So
Gloucester Stage, all kinds of stuff happening. Bring your kids, go see the show, go down to the block party, see the performance there. You guys give so much back to the community. There's so much free stuff. So everybody needs to give to them. Especially this super wealthy benefactor we're looking at. It's like catching lightning in a bottle, but it's going to happen. It's going to keep plugging relentlessly until we find this.
Do they know who they are? As you plug away.
We're just going to keep plugging. That's it. We have another very special guest that Catherine Ryan brought into our lives. Right? You were responsible for this, right?
Yeah.
Because you found... Oh, you guys taking off?
Yeah.
It was great to see you.
Thanks
for coming in.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you, Barb.
Yeah.
Barb. Bob. Bob and Bob. See you later, Bob and Bob. Take it easy. Anyway, Catherine, why don't you explain how Deborah Kramer came into our lives?
Okay. Deborah Kramer is a... Right here.
She has stuff in the Smithsonian?
She is a renowned science writer. She's a book author that lives in Gloucester, and I think everybody should know about her. Not only because the books are fabulous and what she's writing about, but they're beautifully written. So if you like Elizabeth Colbert, who writes all the time for The New Yorker, if you liked Rachel Carson's, you know, she's on this on this timeline of fantastic writing about science and nature, and the Smithsonian, in their section that celebrates ocean, you know, Deborah's voice is part of all the text in the accompanying book. But recently, her most recent book is The Narrow Edge, A Tiny Bird, An Ancient Crab and an Epic Journey.
Which you can buy at the Gloucester Thin Air, and we also have a link if you need to book it. Bookstore of Gloucester.
Yes.
And Toad Hall.
Yes.
All right. We got to put. We like to, if you're going to buy it, go there and buy it. Right?
Yep. Support your local
Support the
bookstore.
Local bookstore. Yep. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And it is such a great read. You will learn so much about this fragile bird and our entire coast. But you will also hear about horseshoe crabs. So,
but you brought her in. Was it originally with the pipers?
It was originally with the pipers, but also it was the horseshoe crab element
that really hooked you.
Well, they both did. They're equal. They're equal co-stars in this book. But I knew about the bird. I knew nothing about horseshoe crabs. Right. And when you read about horseshoe crabs, she makes them so compelling because they're so important. And
they're prehistoric, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're 450 million years old.
That's bananas.
So
you have a lot of facts. I want you to talk about the blood, too.
Yeah.
So, Deborah.
Yes.
Just thank you for coming, first of all.
Yeah. It's such a pleasure for me to be here. I am so grateful to you, Catherine, and to you, Joey, because you put the whole word out about the
I haven't done anything. Catherine's done everything,
and
to be honest.
I'm really grateful. I'm meeting tons of people I haven't met before. I'm learning lots about Gloucester I didn't know.
So, you're collecting data on the horseshoe crabs?
Yeah, I'm really interested in knowing, like, when I moved here, which was about 33 years ago now, Walker Creek, where I live, had horseshoe crabs in them. But the people who've lived on Concord Street by the old mill on Walker Creek, families have lived there for several generations. That creek used to be packed with horseshoe crabs.
Mm.
And I never realized that. And so I was just interested in learning what the history was here, because it's held by so many people in their 60s and 70s, and I don't want that history to be lost.
Nice. Very nice. And the horseshoe crab, you said something earlier to me, like, do you get a vaccination? Why don't you go through that exercise with me?
Well, come close. Well, how many vaccinations have you had in your lifetime? Lots.
Plenty.
And your kids, lots.
Plenty.
And then you don't really look very old, but at some point, you know, people get heart stents, hip replacements, knee replacements, and then sometimes your kid has appendicitis, like my kid did, had to go to the hospital and got IV antibiotics, you know, when she was in the hospital. Any vaccination, any drug that goes into your bloodstream, or any medical device that goes inside you, is subject to contamination that could kill you. And the only FDA-approved test to detect that contamination in our drugs and medical supplies is the blue blood of the horseshoe crab.
Which, and you told me that the blue blood of the horseshoe blue is the color, is as blue as the color of my eye. I have very blue eyes, but like a very, it's right. blue. It's not like a shade of blue, it's blue.
No, it's the blue.
That's pretty wild,
eyes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah,
that's
because it has
And you told me that like the property, like it's like one drop in a whole swimming pool.
Right, so if it's detecting this contamination, if it's as diluted as one drop in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, the blue blood of the horseshoe crab can find it.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah.
And what's really amazing is that it's in this animal that's so old, and I think one of the reasons is it's been able to survive for so long, because it can detect this stuff.
Yeah, well, yeah.
It's like a superhero wildlife.
It's a superhero wildlife. And if
Hey, do they have a wild cratch dedicated to the horseshoe crab? I wonder if they do. You know wild cratches? You got it, right? You have kids,
yes.
Right? If you have kids, you know. But wild cratch, all really cool animals. They have
two brothers. Slightly energy similar to Joey here.
Well, that'd be pretty interesting.
No, it's cool. It's a pretty good show. But your book, The Narrow's Edge, like, what was the impetus for the book? Like, where was your jumping off point? Was it birds, or was it the horseshoe crab, or was it just like,
It was both. It was like, I'd heard my neighbors talking about lots of horseshoe crabs in Walker Creek, and then I read that there were really lots of them down in Delaware Bay. Mm. And so I went down to Delaware Bay to look at them. And there, it's an amazing scene. You go out on the beach in the middle of the night, and there's 40, 50,000
right.
of them on the beach. Yeah. And but it's the timing is everything. If you go too early, the beach is empty. If you go too late, the beach is empty. It's just this 1 hour around high tide.
Yeah.
And
it's just one day.
It's a couple days every month at the new moon okay. and the full moon. And so then the next day, I went back to the beach, and there were thousands of birds running around eating the eggs that had been washed up by the waves. And I was astounded by those birds. They were thin, they were hungry, and they were running around like crazy. And I was trying to figure out, you know, it was kind of a stupid question, basically where they had come from, that they were so famished, and where they were going, that they were in such a hurry. And what I learned was that in a 10-day period, these sandpipers, essentially, are going to double their weight eating the pin-sized eggs of horseshoe crabs. Now, you try to imagine doubling your weight in 10 days, and you would be very sick. Mm. But this is what these birds do, and the reason they have to do that is the next leg of their trip is to go all the way up to the Arctic where they lay their eggs. So I decided that I would follow these birds from the tip of South America where they started their trip all the way up to the Arctic. It's one of the longest, long-distance migrations in the world.
Wow, these little birds.
Isn't it awesome?
Yeah. Little teeny birds.
Yeah. These knots weigh about no more than a coffee cup at their fattest.
Dang, huh? So how far north did you go?
I went just south of the Arctic Circle.
And did you take pictures of them or anything?
I didn't, but there were people there who did.
I want to see these pictures. Can we get a hold of these? Catherine, can you find the pictures?
We'll get back to you. Yes, definitely.
Oh, what's going on? What's the big mystery about the pictures?
No. There's some copyright.
There's copyright issues with some of them. Also, the knot pictures, it's very, like, when you see these birds down in Delaware Bay, and I have pictures of them in Delaware Bay.
The flocks of them?
They're concentrated on the beach. There's, like, there'll be 5,000 of them on this really tiny beach. But then up in the Arctic, they nest over this, across the entire Canadian Arctic. So we had to walk 10 or 12 miles every day
looking
for these nests. And it was pretty stressful and it was pretty strenuous. And when the Canadian Wildlife Service told me that they would take me up there, they asked me how fit I was. And I walked up and down Wingersheek Beach in water up to my thighs, about a mile, you know, to try to get ready
trying
for
to
that.
Prepare.
Yeah.
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 It wasn't.
So it was pretty tough.
Yeah. Oh. So when you would walk, 10 or 12 miles, would you see more than one? Would you see a nesting pair? Would you see
How did you
more?
Identify the where the nest was going to be? Or did you just go with like a circular pattern until you come across
it?
You have to read the book.
One second. So it's very tough in the Arctic, and we can't see the pictures.
No, you can see some. I have some.
Can we
pictures.
Point to someone else's a website that has
yes,
the picture?
I'm
okay, that's what I'm getting to.
Because
I want to find.
I can give you some of my Arctic pictures. The birds are very, very hard to find up there. You were asking how hard it is to find them. The birds are, I have some pictures that I can give to you.
Just
give
me small crop ones, so no one's going to blow them up and use them for any commercial bird.
They'll be low-res ones. I'll give those to you.
And put a big watermark across the middle. I don't care.
We'll get it.
The bird is disguised in the rock, so you practically can't see it until you're
on top of it.
But when you have, you were asking me how we did this. We divided up in these grids, and each of us, had 10 or 12 miles every day to cover. And so sometimes we would see them. We were looking at a lot of other birds up there, and sometimes we wouldn't. And it was challenging because, you see what I am here. I had to learn how to
navigate.
A shotgun, and because there's the densest concentration of polar bears in the Arctic is up where we were. So in our lives,
that was a requirement.
Zero chance of me going up there.
That was a requirement.
You can have fun up there. There's no meat on your bones, so what are they going to do with you?
Well, I don't know, but they were, I mean, so in addition to looking at the mirrors, I had to always be looking over my shoulder.
Yeah. It must be stressful. But it must be exciting at the same time.
It was stressful, but in lots of ways it wasn't stressful at all. It was really beautiful.
Exhilarating.
And it was really quiet.
Yeah.
And there was no sound but the sound of singing birds.
Wow.
I mean, it was really gorgeous.
Did you have a partner when you were like marching around?
Yes. Now a lot. Yeah, we went in pairs because you could... We had GPSs, we had radios, we had all this stuff, because you could get lost.
Really lost, yeah.
Wow. Jesus, that's unbelievable.
I know, I can't even imagine now that I actually did this.
I mean, there's so much to say about this book, but I think even in what you're describing here, the arduous journey for the bird, I mean, you were sort of almost an homage to the bird. Your whole journey is really arduous too. So
it
really
matters. How interconnected it is, though, with the horseshoe crab, with the eggs. Because if the eggs weren't there, the birds aren't going to eat the eggs. They're not going to fatten up, and they're not going to make it up there.
That's why the bird is now listed as threatened on the endangered species list, because there weren't enough eggs. So, but the other thing about the bird, since we're doing this today, that's kind of important, is that they're coming back from the Arctic now. The babies are still up there, but the parents are starting to fly back. So out in Essex Bay yesterday, the first one of the season was seen.
On the way back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They stopped in Essex Bay to rest on the way to South America.
And where do they stop in the bay? I mean, the bay is huge.
Well, they stop in lots of places. They stop on the... Do you know Essex Bay? They stop in the sandbars in the middle of the bay. They stop
off of Wingishik Beach.
Off of the southern tip of Cranes.
Okay.
I've never seen them on the northern end of Wingishik, but
if they're on the southern tip of Cranes, they could very easily be on.
Yep. And they're at, you know, they're a little further north too on Sandy Point State Park at the bottom of Plum Island. So the thing about the birds being in Essex Bay is that I had never realized they were in Essex Bay until I came home from the Arctic and saw them there. And that's what led me back to the horseshoe crab, and that's why I am so grateful to Catherine, and why anybody who is listening to this, who has any memory of where the horseshoe crabs used to be in Gloucester, and particularly the beaches where they would come in to spawn, I am really, really interested in hearing about that.
Okay.
Did they ever spawn in this area? Do you think they did?
Yes, on some of the Annisquam beaches.
Yeah.
And there used to be tons of them on the riverside of Wingishik. I've been hearing all this great stuff through Good Morning Gloucester. And people can reach me, I guess, either by posting.
What's your email address?
It's Deborah Kramer, DeborahCramer, at Deborah Kramer, same thing, DeborahCramer,
.net.
Okay. And if there's an email on my website also that people can reach me.
Perfect. Yeah, I just put it in the show notes.
And I would be so, so grateful, because I want to hold on to this history before it's lost.
Well, it would also be interesting to find out why, and perhaps figure out what the conditions were previously, why they were spawning here, and perhaps...
Why they aren't,
and perhaps maybe get them to spawn here again, or, you know...
That would be great.
Yeah.
Maybe the reason was because we had the bubbler pumping out the raw sewage, and they were eating the raw sewage. So you want to bring back the bubbler so we can have this horseshoe crab?
No. Or maybe it was because of that they stopped. So.
Well, no, that wouldn't make sense though, right? Because it was a long time ago.
Yeah, but didn't Gloucester get more and more populated and stuff, and more sewage go in, and
who knows? There was a lot of. When the bubbler was there was actually a lot of activity
with lobsters and
other stuff
lobsters.
Too. Yeah. Yeah, so like, you know, it's funny.
These people eat, right?
Your post lately about the clean, Sarah Robbins. Sarah Robbins is an amazing woman.
Yes.
Is she still alive?
No.
Sarah Fraser Robbins is dead.
When did she pass? Because she used to live next to my buddy Darryl. She used to live right there.
Yeah.
Was it a couple years ago?
No.
It was longer than that.
It was because they dedicated PBD Essex Museum. I can look up the date. The date's okay, on the post, but yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, no, I thought you were going to say something. You just acted were going to say something.
I'm sorry.
I don't remember the name.
No, that's okay. But, the thought is that she was really an amazing woman. Back in the day, there's always like a balance, right? And the balance was this was a fishing community, and the fishing community had a lot of byproducts that were not handled, properly.
Ideally.
The fish guts went overboard. But the fish guts going overboard, actually, like, things were eating the fish guts, right? Like, there was a lot of activity in the harbor and stuff like that. But also, like, the pogies were brought into town, and they processed the pogies, and the pogie oil and the pogie stench from the city depressed the house value and the tourism into the city. People didn't even want to come to Gloucester when we had the dehyde here, because the smell was so... Were you here then?
I lived on Route 133 then, in Essex. It's a very bad curve in the road. And on a day when it was raining a little bit, trucks would come around that curve, and the stuff would fly from the truck onto our front yard and side.
Oh my God. Wow. So you smell it.
But so like back then, when this whole harbor, the clean swim for the clean harbor, the pilings, everything was coated with grease from the pogie oil.
How long was the dehyde plant here for?
Oh God. Yeah, I'm going to totally talk out of my ass and guess, like between the 40s and the mid-70s, or late 70s. So the reason people got, all these workers could afford to live, it's the whole catch-22. Like the workers could afford to live here because no one else wanted to live near the dehyde, right? And they all lived on Portagee Hill and in East Gloucester. Everybody came down from the hills and went to work at 7 o'clock in the morning and 6 o'clock in the morning, packed fish all day long, and then they went home. By 3 o'clock, it was all done. And but everybody bemoans that way of life. We all, like, we yearn for the old days when we had this working waterfront. But if they really wanted it back the way it was, they'd be miserable with the stink.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
the reason I started writing about it and thinking about it was because of Deborah's book. And because of Rio, and so in the news, and rather than the negative side, I think it's remarkable that in our recent past, it was like that, and it's cleaned. And I think we're out there on that.
I saw somebody's comment that said, like, we don't have the proper treatment, that we only, like, flush out the first batch. There's not the second.
We don't have nitrogen, right.
We don't have the second stage. So,
Expound on that. What was that all about? Water treatment plant?
It's a very, 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 very long thing. But the Clean Water Act, wasn't getting enforced. And I think, but besides the Rio thing that was on my mind and Deborah's book, the other thing that was on my mind was trash now and littering and people's responsibility, and things don't change so much. So in the 70s, if you look at all the coverage, there isn't a lot of discussion about pollution. There really isn't. There is, everybody's in the beach, everybody's in bikinis, and it
really... Well, why.
But it really changes with this Clean the Coast in 1980, and with her swimming, Sarah, and with Mass Audubon coming in, and it's a whole other story about that. But the Clean Water Act wasn't being enforced, and it took probably 10 or 11 years for here. You have to then come up with the process and how it's going to change and how it's going to be regulated.
You know why it didn't get enforced, though, right?
Yeah, and then there's a lawsuit.
But why? So tell me why it didn't get enforced.
Because, well, there's so many factors, but a big one is economics.
Right.
And,
okay.
You know, there's sewage going straight in from houses that are in...
But not so much houses. It was the fish processing that went here. The lifeblood of this city. That was
absolutely
why it wasn't being, like, you want to get dance around it or you want to talk about it. The reason it wasn't being enforced is because you're going to put a couple thousand people out of work.
Right.
If it was enforced. They needed to spend the money, and they needed to, you know, and then there was the sewage around, you know,
and
then, okay, so then who's putting in sewer systems.
That's right.
And the anti-development people didn't want sewer in North Gloucester because it was going to be able to be developed.
Yeah.
So they fought tooth and nail, the same people that would tell, that most likely would be to tell you that they wanted no sewerage going into the ocean, fought against a sewer system because they were scared to death that parcels wouldn't get developed that weren't previously developed.
In their backyard.
Absolutely. But I think it's fascinating. I do. But I also think it's a lot of positive now. And that's really what I was trying to focus on. And Mike Hale, the director of DPW, and so many people at DPW will be happy to talk about it and say where things are and what, you know, it's not a measure of unwillingness. You know, they're trying to meet compliance. They have a million other scope of work is huge, right? This is one component.
I didn't understand what the comment was. Like, my question was, like, what is the steps that we're missing? Like, that was somebody wrote in a comment that we're missing.
Right.
Like.
So there's Mike put a comment response back to that, which you can read. I'll put you to the comment that's on there. But it's millions of dollars. You know, it's another $60 million. So it's not an unwillingness. It's
a lack of funding.
We need to, yes. And then it comes into, you know, nobody says this really, but we did the polluting. So.
We need to what?
We did the polluting.
Oh, we did.
So, you know, we're mad and we want all this done. We want everything clean. But we also can bring home our trash off the beach from Wingachique. And, you know, it's like these same patterns of apathy in the 70s are still a little bit here.
Yeah, I think it's less so, though.
I can't really participate in this conversation that much because I don't really know about the current issues right now.
Yeah.
But I just did want to say that in previous decades, the federal government provided tons of money for communities to upgrade their septics and build their sewage treatment plants. And we as a nation have decided that the federal government doesn't serve us anymore. So the funding for all of these activities has gone away. And so the burden is now on the individual
communities. We had an opportunity.
She's
trying to be nice and dance around. We had an opportunity to get this paid for by the federal government.
Oh, we know.
The anti-development people said, no, we don't want it.
This happened when? When did that
back,
happen?
I think, was it Leo Alpa was the mayor? I don't know if it was Leo Alpa. I don't know. I'm not sure which one it was. But there was a political...
So
it was
like
it was totally
80s,
political.
Was and it was in the 80s or the 90s?
Huh?
Was this in the 80s or the 90s?
It was either late 70s or early 80s.
Okay.
There was money. It might have been late 80s. Was Toby there? Was Toby the one that said no to the...
Rapture was in there too, right?
I'm not exactly sure. All that I know...
Because there was money.
They were going to pay.
Right.
And for political reasons, they said... We don't want it because they had people, all those North Gloucester people didn't want development in their backyards.
But in that window of time with the coast, it was private organizations and agencies like the Mass Audubon and the city and the people. It was this confluence of thing and in 10 years of a lot, there's a lot of good work and good people the whole way. So the post I put was really about, I'm happy someone dug these pipes and did the sewage. And, you know, while I'm thanking whether it's politicians or scientists or, you know, Mass Audubon, I want to thank the guys that are out there doing it. And they were all guys, I asked. There were no women digging the pipes and... you know, needing to go to a decontamination shower. I'm just really grateful for what they did. And
who did what when? What are we talking about?
I'm talking about the DPW, all the DPW employees that had to clean up our pollution to make this happen.
To make that happen.
To get rid of the the fry rings.
Are you talking about over the course
labor.
Of the past 30 years, or are you talking about a
yes,
specific event?
I'm talking about the course of the past 30 years, that they are on this timeline of helping, and that they've kept us safe by doing that. Yeah. And I think they deserve a big shout out.
Absolutely. Mike Hale and the DPW, they do with the resources that they have available
to them is astounding.
Not casting aspersions on the DPW.
No.
I hope that didn't come across that way.
But I want to make sure that they're part of this and that we're proud of them. So I want my kids to know it's not just the firefighters and the police, which I'm very happy they're keeping us safe.
Our heroes don't wear capes.
But our water is safe. Our water is safe. It's important.
It is important.
And we're not Rio.
Yeah. No. I can tell you from a personal, first-hand perspective.
Yeah.
I was down here when I was 9 years old. I'm about to turn 49 years old, so I've been on the waterfront for almost 40 years.
Yeah.
Down this particular dock, the amount of what you can see, the bottom of the ocean in front of our dock now, compared to the way it was when I was growing up, pollock fishing off the front of the dock. It's not even.
It's like night and day.
It's night and day.
Yeah.
And this is like people.
That's my point.
No one would think to jump off the roof of the dock here on a hot day and go swimming in Gloucester Harbor like 15 years ago, like we do now.
Right, and everybody goes to Half Moon Beach now.
Yeah.
No, you never would have done.
And Pavilion Beach.
Yeah. That's fantastic.
That's what.
So there's that.
Okay.
Deborah, people can send in their horseshoe crab remembrances.
Yes, I would love it.
And it's Deborah Kramer, Deborah with a H, at deborahkramer.net.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming. We got a link to your book. I hope you sell a ton of books.
Thank you.
It'll be awesome. What's your next step? What's coming up?
I don't know.
Just with this project. This is an ongoing thing for you.
Well, no, I.
How do you pay the bills?
I work really slowly, and I do this out of love. And the answer to how I pay the bills, the honest answer, would be that I live on what I call the matrimonial fellowship.
There you go. Nice. God bless.
He has never, the amount of money that I pull in every year above the costs of doing this is negligible.
Yeah. Labor of love.
It is.
And you have a partner that supports
you. Yes, you should.
God bless. God bless. That's awesome. All right. Buy the book. Check her out. And hopefully just more positive. Like all the stuff that you're doing, the awareness and the knowledge that we gain from this. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
Kim, I know you're interested in this stuff too.
Yeah.
Did you have any more comments you wanted to add in?
No, I just loved meeting Deborah. And really, I've been a fan of your. I read your book a little while ago, and I loved it. And now I think maybe I'll reread it again.
Well, I love reading your posts. I love reading about your perspective on the birds out here, because you're looking at them in a different area, physical area, than I am, and so it's a great compliment.
Oh, thank you.
It's wonderful.
There you go. I want to give a shout out to our good friends of the blog, Jim and Pat Dalpiez.
Oh yeah.
Who just they came up, they visit a couple times a year. They just popped in their head, but they wanted to give a shout out to Donna and the 1 Hour at a Time gang. Jimmy picked up some trash with them yesterday, and he said the area that they cleaned up, you would not have believed.
And they were near Cape Pondice in that.
It's a fenced off lot.
Yeah,
and it was fenced off. And he said that our little Donna, climbed this huge fence to get on the other side so that she could collect trash and stuff like that.
Yeah.
She's a maniac.
Yeah.
She's a total maniac.
And I think she was there photographing the Oliver P. Hazard. And right away she said to Scott, I'm bringing the 1 Hour at a Time gang here next week.
Before they came, so it would be clean.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, it was, they had already been here. The Oliver Hazard, this was while she was photographing the Oliver Hazard Perry that she saw the big mess.
Did you get to see the boat?
Oh, yeah.
Were you up close to the boat?
Oh, my God, it's incredible.
Did they give us any special access? Are you taking off, Deborah? It was nice to see you. You don't have to act like you're not leaving. You're leaving. It was nice to see you.
Really nice. It's
take it easy. Thanks for coming in.
Really lovely. Nice
to meet you.
Did they give us any special access? Because if not, they're dead to us.
Well,
just kidding.
Actually, I've been invited to be on the committee to help bring the boat here, because they're thinking they're going to bring it here next in September. Yeah. And
are they going to be here for the Schooner Festival?
I don't think so. It's like two. I don't know why. It's like 2 weeks after that they're scheduled. But you know, it's boat time. It's things change. So
yeah.
Who knows? They could be here.
Okay. So you're on the committee.
So they asked me to be on the committee to help bring it here on a yearly basis. So they'd like to bring it here regularly. So that would be kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So that's all. I've just been invited to be on the committee. I said, I don't know what that entails. I said, yes, I'd be happy to help.
Okay. Here's the thing. This is what I want you to be aware of. Okay.
Do you want me to close this?
Well, I thought it was really hot, and you might enjoy the breeze.
No, you know what? It just got loud. That's all. I'll sit closer.
That's okay. I'll close it. So here's the thing I want you to keep in mind. We have the Ardell, the Lannan, and now the Adventures back online.
Right.
We'd love to have, it'd be really nice to have them here when the Schooner Festival is.
Yeah.
And when they, if they come another time during the year, it's kind of just eaten into our the boats that have probably a real good 8-week window to make money.
Money,
here.
Yeah.
So try to get them here during the Schooner Festival so they're not sabotaging the sales of our locals. I just, you know, I mean,
yeah,
be on the committee to bring them here and beat up on our local.
I
know they all love each other, and right. there's a fraternity ship between these captains and stuff like
and
that.
And also, I think some of the feeling is like the more interest that you generate in it, the more it brings everybody down to the water. But on the other hand, I wouldn't do anything to.
No, I know you would. I just thought
it was going to, then I wouldn't do it.
I know you wouldn't. When they came. The first time around, you saw the post that I put up, right? It's a great opportunity to go on the Lannan because I'm sure they're going to sail
right by
Oliver Hazard, right? Because we want to help our the people that help us out all the time and look out for us. Right. We want to make sure that they get well taken care of.
Yes.
There we go. We get that. Talk about the. Have you been to this new restaurant?
No, but it just opened up yesterday. It's Studio Crepe, so we haven't been. But it sounds wonderful because
I picture you as a crepe person.
Well, I make them, so occasionally I love them, but
of course she makes them.
I don't I don't go out and say I'm gonna go eat crepes, but I mean
I could see you being a crepe person.
But I do like them. So
light and fluffy.
Well, you don't really make the crepe. The crepe is just...
The crepe makes you?
The crepe, you just... it's very easy to make a crepe. It's just a very, very thin pancake, basically. You have to get the pan really hot.
Oh, it's not egg? Crepe is not based, egg-based?
You're thinking of omelets, aren't you? Are you thinking of
I didn't know that a crepe was a pancake.
It's very thin,
It's a very thin... It's a very, very thin pancake. It's almost the same recipe, except for milk, you use water. You have more... And then you get the pan very hot, pour just like a teaspoon of batter in, you know, flip the pan around, spread it out, and then sometimes you don't even cook the other side because that's the part where you would put all the filling in and roll it up. So, or you can flip them. Either way. It depends on what you're going to use them for.
In any case, Studio Crepe in the Whistle Stop Mall, which is that the same place where the good Italian place is in Rockport, or is it like
Grasso's is?
That's just a couple little bit further down.
Yeah, Whistle Stop Mall is where the train station is.
Yeah, near Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So go support
Cracker
them.
Jacks and
then what I thought was sounded great was they're going to be open. Until 11 o'clock on weekend night. So I think if you come from a music performance at Chaelin Lu, you'll have some place to go.
For a crepe?
Well, for a light supper afterwards.
Like, you can have a crepe afterwards.
Crepe dinner? Do people do that?
You can have crepes for dinner.
There's sweet crepes and there's savory crepes. So savory crepes are filled with veggies and, you know, cheese and
this is very interesting
like
to me because I didn't know that anyone would eat crepe other than a breakfast or brunch thing. I think crepe, I think brunch.
No, they're savory crepes as well.
You can have them for dinner, But and it's a good after.
It's right, you know.
Because 11 o'clock at night.
You don't want something too heavy.
But
they're busting down the crepe barriers. I love this. Preconceived notions about crepes were just busting down.
You're learning about crepes today.
Yes, so. But they are going to be, after the 20th, they are going to be open for breakfast. So.
Well, I speak about breaking down barriers and misconceived notions. Yesterday I had my first facial.
Oh.
You know your skin looks really good. You do look very
fresh and vibrant today. You're glowing.
It's all because of my lovely Kate. She bought me a as a present, she bought me a facial. And when she says that I get a facial, I'm like, you know, you have to be very nice and say thank you very much for this wonderful facial, right? I broke up with a girl one time because she bought me, for my birthday, she bought me tickets to the ballet. And I thought that that was the most ignorant, self-serving, like, thoughtless gift you could give a guy, like a man's man, those tickets to the ballet. Like, it was in my heart of my season when I'm like, I fall asleep at 7 o'clock.
Right.
I'm like fighting to stay awake, and I had to go to the ballet, which I have no interest in the ballet. Okay?
Right.
Like, let's be honest. Like, right. And but anyway, but this is not like this. So I went to this. The woman's name was Ellen, and I went to this.
Where is she located?
She's next to the Beverly Hospital. Kate's family's been going there for years. But misconceived notions, right? Think facial. They're just going to put like some kind of mask on you and pop your zits, and then you walk out the door. No, it wasn't like that at all.
They massage your face,
scalp, and chest and shoulders, which for me, my biggest biggest pain that I have is my shoulders and my neck.
Oh my goodness! Wow.
So it was an hour and a half, and it was amazing.
What kind of facial was it? Was it like a re-energizing or a?
You just like the massage. That's what I
would go. I could have done without the facial part and just kind of like a neck and shoulder massage. It was fantastic. But so there was a bunch of different stages to it. It was So there's the scrub, right?
Right.
You wear it down and you do a little scrub.
Yeah.
Then like they swab it all off, or probably for the dead skin, I'm imagining.
Right. The scrub. Right? Yeah, that's exfoliating. The scrub.
Right?
So that gets the dead skin.
Get the dead skin off, and then. Then she gave me a little massage, and then she put this steam thing like right up in my, puts the cucumbers, I don't know what it was, she put something on my eyeballs, I don't know what it was, but it was cool. And then the steam, it was like a eucalyptus steam that was just going in my face. And at this part I started getting a little anxiety because I couldn't breathe that well. And so I actually it was a little counterintuitive because I actually got a little tension, more build up in my shoulders, because I was like, when is this going to end? Because I couldn't breathe so well, right? But like, so fortunately, it didn't last. That was like, didn't last.
You know,
you
could always say like, move it away.
No, she went in a different room.
Oh,
I thought it was going to fuck everything up. So then I hear her come back in. I'm like, thank God she's back. And then she did some other things. She took the steam away, which is very relieving. And then she massaged my shoulders and neck.
And she did the massage afterwards.
Yeah, yes. Before and after the steam thing. And then she did a few blackheads. You know, I guess she got a few blackheads. There wasn't much to do, I guess. And then put like an oil or some kind of cream on my face.
Are you going to put her link? The link to the facial.
I don't know that she has a link. I'm not sure. I'll have to ask Kate, and if she does, I will. But
I think there's a lot of good places in Gloucester too. Facials as well.
Which I would say,
Deb Kuhl, I think.
Deb Kuhl is awesome. So it was all good. But it was interesting. But misnomer, a guy thinks a facial, that's all it is like a very feminine thing. But it really wasn't. In all fairness, I probably wouldn't do it. Like, I would take a straight up massage over doing a facial again, because I could use the work on my shoulders and my neck.
It was a little more.
Just like you could have crepes for dinner.
It's good to try new things.
Try new things. Just broadening
good
the horizon.
Try new things. Think if you had gone to the ballet those many years ago.
Oh, God.
You could be
dead
dancing
on the side of the road.
You could be
dead
dancing
on the side, trying to drive home from the ballet. Dead on the side of the road.
You know what? I want to just add one thing, because we were talking about eating after the theater.
I'll
tell you what to do. Tom and I do this all the time. We go to the Franklin, and you can sit right at the bar.
Oh, yeah.
And
they're
because they're open late, and practically everyone, they're open until like 12:30 at the Franklin. Mm-hmm.
Franklin is the only place in town. Jalapeno's on the weekends.
Okay.
Has a late menu
listen,
Friday and Saturday.
Listen to what I get. I get the grilled calamari,
on a bed of, it's their appetizer, but it's grilled calamari on a bed of beautiful greens with white beans. And it's like a total dinner. It's light and it's perfect and it's what we do.
So
you know, after going to the theater, because we don't want to eat dinner at like 6 o'clock.
Right. I like eating afterwards too, and it's always a challenge. Yeah. Fun fact about the Franklin that, you know, they have the Mo cocktail, Mo and David were the original owners of the Franklin. Mo first came to Gloucester, Maureen. She was the girlfriend of a tech director at Gloucester Stage.
Wow, really?
This tall, handsome Dutch guy, Peter Schmidt, and she fell in love with him and, like, left her, she was a bartender, left her job in Boston and spent the summer here and, like, waitressed at the Rum Line.
Oh.
And then she was, and David Dubois came out here to work some put-ins because they had all worked together at the Boston Opera Company and came in, a put-in is when they build the set. And to do some strikes, David came out here too. And
David was, are you talking about David that was the owner of?
The Franklin.
The Franklin in Southend.
Yes, and here, no, when they opened it up.
Right.
Yeah. And so they knew Gloucester, then they went on to decide to open a restaurant. And
do you know the story of how Maria got involved? I know she worked there, right? But how did she end up buying it from them? I never really got the story.
I don't
how it
know the whole story. I think she, I don't know. I can't say that. Yeah. I only know from the beginning because Mo, you know, Mo came back here and she was like, I know Gloucester Stage. I went in there to sell them an ad for the program. And she was like, I know Gloucester Stage really well, you know. And she, and that was one of the reasons, I think, they loved Gloucester when she lived here and worked here for Gloucester Stage. Mm-hmm. And David had been here, and that was one of the things that made them want to invest in our community and open their first restaurant outside of Boston here. And they both had performance backgrounds and everything, so they're open late for not only, you know, they were open in the South, and when they opened in the South End, it was also for like other restaurant people. Mm-hmm. So they had somewhere to go. And theater, and they worked, I think it was the Opera Company of Boston they worked at. And
yeah, we see a lot of restaurant people in there.
Yeah. And I mean, when they
I think at one time, I don't know if it was, you know, industry night, like, you know, the bar people, Monday nights, be industry night. I think the Franklin had a Monday night scene there with a lot of the restaurant people would go there because a lot of, at one time or another, like a lot of restaurants would close in the winter for on Mondays.
Monday nights, yeah.
So they would, you know,
they would be open.
Yeah. And David said when they were first open in the South End, when they would be open till midnight, he said they had a lot of nights where they didn't have a lot of business and they hung on and, you know, knew that it was a good thing to do. Yeah. And, you know, that's the way they felt about Gloucester, and we're so thankful at the theater because
and they're still doing it. I mean, they're open till 12:30.
Yeah.
I love, you know, I tell you, some of my best memories were when it was Au Beaujolais. At the Union Square, where Union Hill Coffee Shop was. They bought it from Ron.
From the Gilson.
From Ron Gilson.
Okay.
And then they moved it. They're the ones who created that space.
Right.
How beautiful that space was. It darkened that scene. And I always go back to and credit Au Beaujolais for the renaissance of this, honestly, the whole city, because they kicked off. There was the White Rainbow before, but the White Rainbow was down in the basement.
Right,
and it was
right,
just
right.
Like dinner.
Right.
There really wasn't anything going on what Alex and David. It was a different David.
David. Oh no, I know David. I know that David too.
David Amaral.
David Amaral. Yeah.
And what they had created there, open the doors for all these other restaurants to say, yes, we can do this, we can support this kind of a place. Now we get a dozen places like this.
Well, remember when they were at Union Hill, and then when they had to close, it was patrons who
gave the money to keep them going at the other place.
Yeah, who kind of drove the bus to get them down the street.
Yes, I was, I mean, I didn't give the money, but I was heartbroken. Like, I was single, and that was my, like, I met the girls, I met girls in Boston, I'd bring them there, and it was just
like.
Oh,
is that
like,
where you had your mojo?
It
that
was lights out. It was funny, I had, I'm not even gonna tell you. I had my, It was fun. It was a fun place. But, yeah. We got to stop this because we're running way late. And there's one more topic that I really want to talk about.
Okay.
The ospreys. Okay. You can make it brief, but okay. I want you to give us an osprey update.
Osprey, a winged creature update. The osprey, I met the man who built the platform. This wasn't done through Greenbelt, so...
He just did it on his own?
He did it on his own. So he, for 2 years, he lives near the, on the Anasquam River near the train tracks. And for 2 years in a row, he watched a young pair of osprey try to build a nest on the train signal, right on the tracks. And sure enough, the railroad workers had to come and destroy it because it was right on the signals. And so this year, he built a platform on his own. And I know at some point he's been, you know, in contact with Greenbelt and stuff like that, because they came out eventually and they banned it, the osprey that he has on his property.
Wow.
But from, so he and his wife invited me to come on their porch and, photograph and
film. Did Paul Morrison alert you to this first, or did these people?
Yeah, no, Paul Morrison.
Give him some credit.
Yeah. So first Paul invited me to go out on the boat, and he and I went, and we had a really nice view. I mean, it was still pretty far away from my equipment, but we had a very nice view, and I'm very grateful to Paul for doing that. So while I was there, I could see how you could access it from land. So I went to the folks' home, and I knocked on the door, but they didn't hear me.
Oh, wow.
So then I went out on the dock, and then...
Then all of a sudden they found out.
Then somebody in the area yelled at me. So then I put a note in the people's mailbox, and they called me back, and they couldn't be nicer. They invited me to come up for coffee and banana bread and sit on their porch. But this gentleman is so cool. He knows so much from just sitting there observing them. So there's a mom and a dad and a fledgling, and they're doing beautifully. And even like the nests that they have over in Essex don't have babies in them. You know what I mean? They were unsuccessful. The ones that over there by Greenbelt. It's not so usual for it to be so successful for a young pair. Oftentimes, young pairs will only have one, and then the one won't even survive. So yeah,
but it's really cool. What are they? What's the diet of an osprey?
All fish. 80% of the diet is fish, and they 100% of the diet is fish, and they eat over 80 different species of fish.
Whoa! Do you know what the name of Stevie Corbett's boat is?
No.
The osprey.
Oh, is it? Mm-hmm. Oh, I wonder what he knows about ospreys. That would be fun to find out, or why he chose the name the osprey.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like it's a truly Gloucester species because it just eats fish.
Yeah, but I mean, I know that when you go through the Anasquam River, especially up behind where Farnham's is, they got all these...
Yeah, they have the nesting.
They get the nesting.
And those were installed by Greenbelt. So the exciting thing is that Don and his wife, Eleanor, they're trying to get... He's already building a second platform, and he's trying to get permission to put it on the marsh that's adjacent to the marsh where his is right now. But
I got to say, this is one of those situations where you're better off just, kind of... ask for forgiveness rather than permission.
Permission, well.
Because you get the osprey there who's going to bust your chops, right?
but
if you don't...
Once they get on there, what are you going
to
do? Right?
But then like the people that are like, they want to have ownership of this, and then they go, no, you can't put it there, but then they'll go put one like 2 feet down the road.
These
people can be.
I think the marsh that the one is on is his property, but the marsh that he wants to put the other box on isn't his property. So that's why he has
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The pictures are awesome. They're great.
Yeah. I mean, if I had a 600mm lens, I could really get amazing close-ups, but, you know.
All right. After we get the rich benefactor to tune up the
Gloucester
stage, we're gonna do a GoFundMe for
Kim's camera. That's what I was gonna say, GoFundMe for Kim's camera, yeah.
GoFundMe for everything. GoFundMe. Yeah. Anyway, Gloucester Cast 196. This is 123. I think it's our longest one. What the hell? It's great. I love it. Hey, Heidi, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
The people that hung on the longest, Kat Ryan left.
Yeah.
She abandoned us. We got Heidi Dallin from Gloucester Stage,
yeah.
Kim Smith, and Joey Shimataro, and all our rest of our guests. Thanks for listening. I had a good time. I hope you guys did too.
Yeah, it was great.